The modern Hitler is going to be a guy like Tony Blair. I mean, that's just obviously it.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's October 10th, 2009. Time for your Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 138.
This is No Agenda.
Proud to be a citizen of the people who are bombing the moon. And coming to you from the Minimum Security Containment Cell in Gitmo Nation West, San Francisco, California, where it's Fleet Week, I'm Adam Curry.
And from an area where the days are getting shorter, northern Silicon Valley, the sun's moving toward the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill
in the morning.
Yeah, it's Saturday evening over here in Gitmo Nation West, but you know it's
in the morning
somewhere.
You know, I've been looking at some people that have been advising people to listen to our show. And one of them said, well, you know, I've had to talk him into getting past the cornball
opening. The opening, yeah, I've heard that too. But it's, we're going to change the opening?
No. It'd be crazy. The opening is the best part of the show half the time.
That's exactly right. No, there's a couple other gems in there, which we play from time to time.
I don't know what they want. I mean, I listen to a lot of these podcasts. In fact, I sent our cohort at Mevio, Andrew Grummet, off on a kind of
homework exercise, actually.
A mission to listen to a bunch of these skeptic-style podcasts, which is the kind of podcast we do, generally speaking. And I listened to a bunch of them, and most of them, I mean, some of them had, you know, the information was fair, but the presentation was so amateurish.
Yeah.
And unprofessional that, you know, I just can't understand why anybody would want people to go there, go that way.
Which, by the way, has nothing to do with the jingles. jingles do not necessarily make you professional.
Yeah, I thought it did.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah. So, a couple things. First of all, I have a new setup, which I just wanted to mention, which I will take a picture and publish this. I have a new microphone stand, which I'm quite proud of.
Oh, let me try to guess what it might be consisting of.
You'll never guess it. You'll never guess it.
Okay, well, let's see. Your favorite stand was always a toilet paper roll or a paper towel roll, that piece of cardboard crap that's usually found in the middle of it.
Yes.
Or maybe the roll itself with the microphone hanging loosely from the clip that you clipped it on there. So I'm sure it's just ridiculous.
Well, first I should say that, you know, I've now discovered that with this setup, and everything's run completely on the Mac, there's no hardware gear except for two MIDI controllers. One that controls Ableton Live, which I use in the live processing mode. And the other one, so that's really for faders. And the other one is the jingle box, which is a whole bunch of buttons so I can
in the morning
fire that stuff off. And I use this microphone, which not only is it handy, it's a wireless lav set transmitter receiver. Not only is it extremely handy because you can take it with you anywhere, it's compact, but it sounds good. I don't know if it's this setup or for what reason it is, but it sounds better than any other microphone I've ever used on this show. Would you not agree?
Well, I mean, I've only heard you. I don't know that you've used another microphone.
Yeah, London. In London, I used a couple different ones. I've had, you know, like $4,000 microphones, and nothing sounds as good. It just doesn't. So anyway, the mic stand I'm using, because we changed the work table around, and so now I have less space in front of the laptop, so I can't actually put the paper towel holder down in front of me, which is a bummer because I still like that because of the damping qualities. But I went to Radio Shack and I got an alligator clip. So I have two monitors. I have the laptop in front of me, and then a secondary widescreen monitor above the laptop screen. And on top of that, I taped an alligator clip from Radio Shack and a telescopic antenna, which is essentially just clipped into the alligator clip, and I can extend the tubing, the antenna, right down to my mouth, and on the end of that, I've clipped my little lav mic.
Sounds like one of those old roach clips from the 70s.
it's the roach clip mic stand. Exactly. That's what it is. That's where we used to get our roach clips, from Radio Shack. You got questions? We got roach clips.
So the thing, I don't know that you do sound pretty normalized with that mic. I mean, it doesn't sound like, I mean, everyone likes my PR40 that I use up in Washington more than they like this mic, generally.
Yes.
For my voice.
Yeah, I like it too.
But I listen to myself on that other mic, and I kind of know what I sound like. I don't sound, that doesn't sound like, that's not, I mean, it's a, it sounds terrific, but it doesn't sound, it's not as, it's not me necessarily.
And, yeah, it's true. It does add a bit of character to your voice, which is, it's not bad, John. A little bit of character.
Yeah, well, I prefer sounding like myself as opposed to sounding like some, you know,
everybody
as opposed to sounding good.
Yeah, really. Everybody, is Johnny in the morning. How you doing? Yeah.
I'm glad you got it.
You sent it to me.
Yeah, I did. I sent that to you because that sound effect, I was listening to, if there's a, there's an archive of old radio DJs, and I can't remember the exact name of the URL, but you can probably dig it up, in the Bay Area. And they had a whole slew of Dr. Don Rose, stuff that he was a famous disc jockey in the Bay Area when in the heyday of rock, and he would, his bits were, he used that donkey sound all the time.
Yeah, back in the heyday when it was kind of cool. Now it's like okay, yeah, right. And we have some important business to take care of right off the bat, John. There's been a little.
By the way, before you start. Today's show's executive producer is Mickey Kennedy. Mickey Kennedy.
Didn't we have to mention something else about Mickey Kennedy?
Yeah, when we do the rundown of who gave us money, we'll mention it then. But right now, it's just Mickey Kennedy.
Mickey Kennedy, who donated the most money for this this particular episode, 138 of No Agenda. And we really appreciate it. And the whole plug comes at the end of the show. Right?
Yeah, he's our executive producer.
Executive producer, Mickey Kennedy.
Okay. Which would look good on the resume, by the way.
Yeah, it does actually look good. You know, 2009, executive produced No Agenda with Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak.
Yeah, we'll vouch for him.
Yeah, we'll write you a letter of recommendation. Hell, you just send us the letter. We'll sign it. We won't just write it yourself.
I mean, essentially, that's what an executive producer does anyway. Nothing.
They just put up money.
Yeah.
That's how it works. Okay. So there's been a little bit of dispute. Whether John has actually read the book Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand or not. The hottest selling book at the moment, actually, or one of the hottest selling books. 300,000 copies this year. Not bad for a book that's 52 years old. I think the only one beating it out is the Bible. And some people actually were saying, hey, you know what? I really want to donate money to the show, but I'll only do that if John reads Atlas Shrugged. And John, you have proclaimed that you read the book.
Yes, I have. But
I'm not quite sure when. I mean, this is over 1,000 pages, and it's really small print, so really more like 1,500 to maybe 1,800 in regular book print. When did you have time to do this?
I make time. I don't sleep.
So, to put the issue to bed, for once and for all, I am going to do a pop quiz, and it will consist of three questions. If you get two of the three questions right, I will never again think that you have not read this book.
Okay, and then after you're done, I'm going to ask you some questions.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. You'll see that my questions are really normal questions that you can answer if you read the book. Are you ready, John?
Sure. Go.
Okay. What item of jewelry did Hank Reardon give to Dagny Taggart? Oops, wrong one. Of course.
What did he give her? He did give her some...
Do I hear you actually turning pages of the book?
No, I don't have the book here, and I'm not going to be able to look it up. It's 1,000 pages long.
It sounded like you were... Okay. So, again, what item of jewelry did Hank Reardon give to Dagny Taggart?
You know, that's a good question, because I don't remember, but I think it was a ring. No, I am down one.
What do you mean you thought it was a ring? This is throughout the entire book, John.
He gave it to her more than once?
No. This piece of jewelry is referenced throughout the entire book.
Hmm. It was something made from that crazy steel of his. I know that.
Okay. It was a bracelet.
Ah, right. And made with Reardon metal.
Yes. And you would have gotten extra credit if you would have said he originally gave it to his wife, and then his wife
didn't want it.
Not bad. Not bad. Okay. Question number two. I'll give you half a point for that.
All right.
Question number two. What was Dagny's first job when she arrived at Galt's Gulch?
I don't know.
You don't know. She had a job. Do you remember when she arrived there?
Yeah, this was. This was. I don't remember that.
It's like essential.
What? Now you're talking about Gulch, the place in the middle of nowhere.
When she crashes her plane and she's
You're not talking about when she was the housemaid for Gulch.
Yes. Correct. Correct. That was her job. I'll give you full points for that.
Her first job was getting through the crash.
No, her actual job. She had to make money. Remember?
Oh yeah, that's right. This is during the period where they're giving all these lectures about you should not serve other people and all that.
Tell me something honestly. Is Mimi Skyping you the answers?
No, nobody's Skyping me anything.
Okay.
She became his housemaid for some unknown reason.
Yes, correct. Okay, here is the third and final question. I'd say you're batting about 80 right now, so that's not bad. What was the evil sound wave machine first tested on?
Well, it was called Project X.
Correct.
And it was tested on the public, I believe, wasn't it?
That would be incorrect.
Mm-hmm. Come on, half a point.
No, well, let me help you out here. It's where they had the military demonstration, and they had all the important people and the politicians show up. Yeah. What did they test it on?
I thought they tested it on the public.
No. Did you read the Cliff Notes?
No, Cliff Notes. Oh, that was a good idea.
They tested it on a farm with goats.
Oh, right, the goats.
Okay.
Well, I got another half point. That's two
you got
points.
You got 2 points. Yes, you got 2 points out of three. I'll say that you probably did read the book.
Well, why don't you give me another question just as a bonus?
No. You asked me some questions.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you some questions. Okay. That's where I got my sheets here. Hold on. Where's HR in most of these stories involving the factories?
What?
HR. There's all this crazy stuff going on in these factories and these companies, and there's no human resources people involved.
Where's HR? They didn't have HR departments in 1948 when the book was written, John.
Yeah, right. Okay, let me ask you this one.
Okay.
You know, at the very end of this crazy book where they're torturing John Gulch?
Yes.
Taggart cracks and realizes that he's been wrong all these years.
Right.
Why did that happen?
He was already on his way to cracking when the big Gulch broadcast came. That's what convinced him. That's
I'll
what
give
convinced
you one
him.
Point. Ready for this?
Yeah.
What was the route of the comet?
Oh, okay. Oh boy, it was Colorado.
Was that the east to west? You know, there was that San Francisco train station was torched or something by a bunch of punks.
Yeah.
And so they had to reestablish the route from San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, they went through the desert, didn't they?
Well, that might be true because apparently this train crapped out in Arizona.
Yeah, in the desert. So what was
How does the train going from San Francisco to New York City go through Arizona?
Dude, it was written by a Russian chick, okay? Give her a break.
What did Wyatt do?
Wyatt, hold on a second. Wyatt,
He's a main character.
Yeah. I forget. Was he? Did he have the? Did he have the coal mine? No. I don't remember.
That's Daniger.
Right.
Wyatt made shale oil.
Oh, right. You're right.
Through some magical
process
in Colorado.
Right. Right.
Remember that?
Yeah. I think I do.
Okay. Here's the question: how does he set his wells on fire when he's dealing with shale, which can't catch on fire, and there are no wells involved?
John, look, I could also ask you a whole bunch of aviation questions that are, the flying in this book is way off the hook as well, but that's not the point. Oh, man.
Let me ask another one.
Let's move on. Come on. I'm just saying,
if you want to start asking questions back and forth.
You read the book. I'm very proud of you.
What's Mr. Thompson's first name? This is the last one.
Mr. Thompson? Tell me who Thompson was again.
He was the leader of the country. He was the president, Mr. Thompson.
I don't remember.
Well, they never give his name, but I have to assume it's Fred, as in Fred Thompson.
Hold on 1 second while we take a short break.
Hello, and thank you for calling Swine Flu Phone. If you believe you're currently suffering from swine flu, press 1 now. You have selected swine flu. If this is correct, press 1 now. If you are suffering from another illness, press 2 now. I'm sorry, I don't understand your selection. If you are suffering from swine flu, press 1 now. You have selected swine flu. Please wait while healthcare officials arrive at your home.
I just had to play that. That was Parker R. Snyder who produced that. I keep getting him mixed up with Snyderman. And I guess he's going to pay for the 30-second ad block if I corrected that. So and anything for the money, John. Anything for the money. That's one of our producers who gives us fantastic stuff to work with. All right. I think the main thing we should talk about, although not actually talk about it, but the reason behind it, is the Obama Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh.
Yes. And
he won it?
Well, yeah. Did you hear?
I thought they were just kidding.
And it's painfully obvious, and I think you'll agree with me, John, that this has been done as some massive distraction. Something is going on, and I have my thoughts about it. Where they don't want the media to focus on something. So like, what can we do? I know. Let's give them a peace prize. That'll keep the fuckers busy for a little while.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
Well, let me say this. It worked. Because the right-wing talk guys have been talking about nothing but.
Not just white, right, but left as well. I mean, everyone's on this. Every single newspaper and politicians are talking about it. So something big is going on.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you. There's two things that took place in the last week that are, you know, we've noticed this before, and we've tried to identify both the right wing and the left wing nothing to see here moments every week, every time we do the show. But the most recent things that have been kind of like distractions, one is Obama winning the Nobel Peace Prize. And by the way, he's giving the money to charity, which I don't think Al Gore did, by the way. And the other thing that
he started his cap and trade stock exchange with the money.
He invested in cap
and trade. Kleiner Perkins Fund 8.
And the other thing that was semi-distracting was this pounding the moon with a missile.
Yeah, well, I'd love the two at the same time because there's nothing like the president of a country who bombs the moon who then gets the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, it just seems like just something kind of weird about that. And you know what? I watched the video. And I'll put a link to that to the NASA video. You can probably find it yourself. It's all over the net. And anyhow, but I was watching it live. I'm like, okay. It's like, yeah. They switched to infrared. Okay, it looks blue. I don't see any heat mapping going on. What the hell happened there? Nothing. I didn't even know if they actually shot anything.
It could have all been bull.
Yeah, totally. And the price of the mission was only $79 million. That doesn't seem like enough.
Well, it's just a, you know, there wasn't like, you don't have to worry about protecting anybody. Just like essentially a shell.
What kind of explosives did they use?
I don't know. I didn't even follow it that much. I thought the whole thing was kind of silly. It all stems from the fact that somehow, you know, India sent up some sort of a probe to the moon
and discovered there's water there.
And then claims that they found water. And, you know, I don't know if they did or not, but it just seemed kind of like, whoa, well, they found water. We never found water. We've been wandering around up there.
So now
we have to go up there and one-upsmanship them by pounding the moon with a missile.
It just makes no sense. And in particular, you know, this really does help my theory that, you know, that I, where I question if we've been on the moon. I mean, come on. How can you not, I mean, how can you miss the obvious? Hey, what's that puddle over there?
Well, you would miss the obvious if you're wandering around on the moon and there's water 30 feet under your feet. I mean, what are you going to be doing? Digging a hole?
Well, then how did this satellite, how did the Indians see it?
Well, I think they must have. That was like a few months ago, and I don't remember how they came up with this notion. They apparently found it in some area, and I guess someplace we didn't go, and so we pounded this area with a missile to either prove or disprove that the Indians found stuff. I don't know. I think the whole thing's a waste of time. The one thing is, just so one day we can go to the moon. If there's water there, then we know we can live there and all this other nonsense. And it's like, we're not going to the moon. We're not putting a colony on the moon anytime soon.
So apparently it was a 2-ton kinetic weapon that was supposed to create a 5-mile-wide crater. Now, I'm sorry, but what, they don't have zoom lenses now? You saw nothing. You saw absolutely
nothing. Was it a nuke?
A kinetic weapon. I'm not quite sure what
does that mean?
I don't know. I'm just reading from the mainstream media publication. I don't know.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Stop the presses.
Let's Google kinetic.
They use the word kinetic weapon or whatever. It was a kinetic weapon, and they don't explain it. For the last 40 years, when I was writing columns in all these newspapers, and you said the word hard disk, their editors would come back and say, "Can you explain what a hard disk is? Because nobody knows what that means." But meanwhile, they just throw kinetic weapon out there, whatever it is. Are you kidding me?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
You could play the pet peeve thing. It'd work.
I was thinking about it.
Hold on. John C. Dvorak's pet peeve of the day.
I'm serious. I mean, it's always galled me from day one when I was writing for these newspapers. Well, hard disk. What's a hard disk?
Yeah. What is a hard disk?
It's a disc.
It's a spinning disc.
Spinning around with data on it.
I love the Examiner. The title of their report. NASA moon bombing violates space law and may cause conflict with lunar extraterrestrials and UFO civilizations. Yeah, no shit. And they complain about Iran. I mean, come on. Get real. Apparently there is a United Nations Outer Space Treaty. Here it is. Resolution adopted by the General Assembly. Treaty on principles governing the activities of states in the exploration and use of outer space, including the moon and other celestial bodies. And you're not allowed to bomb it. it's like a no-no.
No bombing of the moon.
No bombing allowed. This was,
But we can bomb Iraq? Does that make sense to you?
No, of course not. I'm going to put this in the links. That's a pretty good one. Someone just sent that to me. It really is. It's General Assembly resolutions. The General Assembly, having considered the report of the Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space covering its work during 1966, in particular the work accomplished by the Legal Subcommittee. Man, they got a whole thing about space here.
Yeah, you know. Can't be too far ahead of the curve.
Well, this is from a while ago. This is the exploration and use of outer space, including the moon and other celestial bodies, shall be carried out for the benefit and the interest of all countries, irrespective of their degree of economic or scientific development, and shall be the province of all mankind. I got to read through this thing. It's pretty big, this whole UN resolution. I like it. Well, then we violated it.
Yeah, we did, apparently. Obama violated it, and then the next thing you know, he's got a Nobel Peace Prize. Peace Prize, yeah. That makes no sense.
You know, there's a bunch of UFOs flying around, dudes going, "Hey, man, that Obama dude, that's no good. He'd be blowing shit up."
So have we got the results back from this bombing yet?
Well, they found nothing, although the results that I'm reading are, it could be very exciting once we get all the data.
Yeah.
It's being stored on a hard disk, apparently, and they have to wait until it's flown back. It's bull.
Well, it seems like you may be right here. These are two major distractions. Now, I mean, the fact that but who's in on the game? I mean, we did the distraction with the moon bombing ourselves, but the Nobel Peace Prize. Well, I mean, people should know that
this is exactly what I wanted you to explain, because people don't understand what you're about to talk about.
The Nobel Peace Prize, the Nobel Prizes were set up by Alfred Nobel, and there's two sets of them, and one set is delivered with Swedish judges that are chosen within very narrow disciplines to give awards out for scientific progress. But Nobel set up a second group, and they're in Norway. They're not in Sweden. Yeah, they're in Norway.
Oslo.
And they're picked by the government. The government of Norway, the House or the Assembly or whatever they call it, picks five people to choose the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. And the criteria is essentially someone who promotes peace, and some either by throwing away their weapons or by
by bombing the moon,
talking a big game, usually something like that. Whatever they do, somehow it causes. I don't know how Al Gore got it, because I don't know what global warming and peace have to do with each other, but he got one anyway. The point is that by promoting peace, and that's an award comes out in Norway. It's a separate ceremony. It's got nothing to do with the Swedish thing. There is one joint website that covers both these things, but essentially when you start really breaking it down, you find they're separate. But yeah, listening to all these talk radio guys are going on and about that bunch of jerk-offs that the Swedes are
for
giving him
wrong.
This award. And I'm thinking the Swedes have got nothing to do with it.
So how did that brand get so split up? I mean, how does that work? What went wrong? Because clearly there's something. I mean, is there actually a peace prize from the original Swedish Nobel Foundation?
Not that I know of, but the money comes from the same guy. I mean, he set it up as a kind of a combination thing. He just, you know.
Well, how did Norway get involved?
When it was originally established, as far as I know, Norway was designated as the country that would do the award. I think that they came together later. I don't know. I don't know what the exact history is from the inception, which was around the turn of the century. And Nobel, of course, Alfred Nobel is the guy who invented dynamite, for people who out there don't know.
Oh, well, now makes sense.
Concerned after World War II, he was concerned from the beginning. I don't know when he invented dynamite, but he immediately saw the first thing people did with it was, hey, this is cool. We can blow up somebody's building.
Yeah.
And so he felt guilty, I think, that the dynamite was being used for nefarious purposes instead of mining.
Right.
And that's why he created the Nobel Peace Prize. But it's got nothing to do with the other one.
Let's listen to the actual award. I have it on video.
The Nobel Committee has decided that the Nobel Peace Prize for 2009 is to be awarded to President Barack Obama for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples.
By bombing the moon!
You know, the funny thing is that the research indicates that this award was – he was nominated for this award 12 days after he became president. He really hasn't done anything except talk a big game.
Right.
So, but he got the award. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's $1 million into America's coffers, although it would be better if it was in euros. And I guess it was in euros.
I think it's 800,000 euros.
Yeah, so it's something like – anyway.
1.2
So, I mean, I don't begrudge the guy for winning the award. What difference does it make? I can't see getting all worked up about it.
Well, that's the entire point. It's like, who gives a crap? While on Tuesday, there's going to be a secret vote about the healthcare bill, which will not be published online for anyone to comment on it. That's what's going on here, John. There's just no two ways about it.
I just don't think the Norwegians care about our healthcare bill.
No, they don't, but they do care about doing what we tell them to do.
Well, you could make that assertion. It's a possibility.
Hereby made.
Something's up. It is pretty weird. Somebody pointed out, so there was one of these crazy radio guys that went on with all the people that didn't get the Nobel Prize, and he went on with the fact that Mahatma Gandhi, for an example, was nominated four times and never received the award.
By the way, Norway is one of the few countries that does not use the euro, so he's probably getting it in kroner.
Right, that's right. Norway is not in the EU. Norway and Switzerland are the two countries that's told everyone to stuff it, and for good reason. Norway doesn't need to be involved. They're just essentially pumping money out of the North Sea by the ton, and they're rich. It's a very rich country, and Switzerland.
And at
the
end of the day, who gives a crap? Who cares? Who cares? I just can't care.
About what?
About the Nobel Peace Prize. This is what boggles the mind. I pick up the Financial Times, the weekend edition. Front page right there, kaboom. Well, actually, Mickey pointed it out to me because I laid this assertion on her. And she said, oh, right. So, they do this to get everyone talking and to distract the conversation about the real stuff. And right down below the fold to the right of the front page story, which is even the Financial Times is saying, oh, did he really deserve this award? There's a little story on the front page, though, that says, that France has arrested a researcher at the European Organization for Nuclear Research, that's CERN, at the Large Hadron Collider due to links with Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, I saw that story.
Like, yeah, that might be the cover-up right there.
I don't think so. I think it's covering up something else that's probably not on the front page at all or even mentioned.
Well, there you go. Healthcare, not mentioned on the front page. And Tuesday is this secret vote, John.
What secret vote? Oh, wait, how did you find out about it if it's a secret?
Well, I'm not saying, no, the vote, the fact that they're doing it is not a secret. That's why we have to have all this moon bombing and stuff so we don't talk about it. But the bill, which I don't even think has a number yet. Here's what one of our producers sent to us. It was very interesting to me because this is all being worked out by the finance committee. Here we go. The vote is a committee vote, not a vote of the Senate or a final conference bill. So it's going to be put into that shell because then the Senate can't initiate spending bills and the House apparently isn't ready for it. It's kind of a way around the constitutional requirement somehow. And by the way, what is the Senate Finance Committee doing with healthcare? I don't get it.
They have the Finance Committee because if it's going to involve taxpayer money or it's going to cost anything, the Finance Committees have to give it the okay.
Well, we know it's not going to cost any money.
No, it's going to cost money, but it might be. It's going to have some impact, either negative or positive. All bills do. So the Finance Committee, you know, has to, the only thing is the Finance Committee doesn't deal with is when one of these guys comes up and says, "I'd like to declare that January is the
buzzkill month."
Yeah, right. Some bogus, you know.
Let's hear what our president said in his weekly radio address on YouTube.
The historic movement to bring real, meaningful health insurance.
Listen very carefully to the words, John. Listen to what he's saying.
Form to the American people gathered momentum this week as we approach the final days of this debate. Having worked on this issue for the better part of a year, the Senate Finance Committee is finishing deliberations on their version of a health.
So, their version, right?
Health insurance reform.
But wait. Better part of a year? You said better part of a year.
That's what he said, yeah.
Well, I guess he's talking about the 9 months.
It's a better part of a year. Let's listen. Let's listen to more.
Worked on this issue for the better part of a year. The Senate Finance Committee is finished.
Because the worst part is still ahead. That's what that really means.
Finishing deliberations on their version of a health insurance reform bill that will soon be merged with other reform bills produced by other congressional committees.
There you go. So it's going to be merged.
Yeah, that's what they always do.
But he didn't say into a health care bill. That's the TARP bill it's going to be merged into.
Wait, say it. Replay that last part again.
Listen very carefully. You got to listen to the words, man. They're so important.
Phase of this debate. Having worked on this issue for the better part of a year, the Senate Finance Committee is finishing deliberations on their version of a health insurance reform bill that will soon be merged with other reform bills produced by other congressional.
I'm sorry, it does say reform bills. I'm sorry.
Committees. After evaluating the Finance Committee's bill, the Congressional Budget Office, an office that provides independent, nonpartisan analysis, concluded that the legislation would make coverage affordable for millions of Americans who don't have it today. It will bring greater security to Americans who have coverage with new insurance protections. And by attacking waste and fraud within the system, it will slow the growth in health care costs without adding a dime to our deficits.
You know what that sounds a lot like, John? It sounds like
jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
Yay! You know, I'm wondering whether this is even true. He said that the budget office, which looks at these things, he claims that they said that it will make health care affordable.
No, I don't think they said that. I think they said that over a 10-year period.
No, that's what
period,
he said they
yeah.
said.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I couldn't find no evidence of that. What the CBO has
that's
said
just
is...
That's just a lie, then.
Don't call him a liar, you racist. Let's listen.
...fraud within the system. It will slow the growth in health care costs without adding a dime to our deficits. This is another milestone on what's been a long, hard road towards health insurance reform. In recent months, we've heard every side of every argument from both sides of the aisle.
Notice it's now health insurance reform and not health care reform. It's in the nuance that I find the interesting things.
And rightly so. Health insurance reform is a complex and critical issue that deserves a vigorous national debate.
I'm sorry, he's literally changing it.
Yeah, no, health insurance reform is not what we were supposed to be talking about.
No, it's health care reform, which is basically getting the pharmaceuticals in line.
It's not health insurance reform, and health care reform doesn't make – that doesn't. There's no equal sign between those two phrases.
Nope. Nope. No, but it's on the prompter, so let's listen in again.
And we've had one. The approach that is emerging includes the best ideas from Republicans and Democrats and people across the political spectrum. In fact, what's remarkable is not that we've had a spirited debate about health insurance reform, but the unprecedented consensus that has come together behind it. This consensus encompasses everyone from doctors and nurses.
Did you see, I forgot to mention this on Thursday's show, and I do have the link, although I didn't put it in the show notes, I'll put it in for this week. They had a Rose Garden conference with like 50 doctors, you know, one from each state. And, so, you know, when you get invited to the White House, I've had one invite, couldn't go, unfortunately. You know, you dress up, right? You look nice and you're like, yeah, man, dude, I'm going to go, sit in the Rose Garden and the president's going to speak. And so all these doctors were sitting there and it must have been Axelrod or someone who said, hey, you know, you guys don't look like doctors. And they literally handed out white lab coats and they all had to wear white lab coats for the photo op.
Yeah, and there's something fishy about these doctors, all part of some one clique, one organization that is a very left-wing leaning group. I mean, so that whole thing was a photo. It was a bunch of stooges. I mean, it was ridiculous. Yeah. By the way, somebody just reported to me that they say the stream is down.
Oh, really? No, it seems to be working here.
Oh, okay.
Well, let me just double check. It's worth a quick check. No, it's connected. That must be a local thing.
Okay.
It's probably AT&T fucking with us. A little bit more of the president? It's kind of interesting, isn't it?
When see if we can find some other changes that he said that all of a sudden we've changed from healthcare to health insurance.
Health insurance reform, it's something new.
Hospitals and drug manufacturers. And earlier this week, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger of California and New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg came out in support of reform.
Yeah, this was a big win. This was, and of course, they said to Schwarzenegger, it was pretty easy. He said, hey, Schwartzy baby, you already got like $30 billion in stimulus coming. Do you want to go down as the governor that was there when the state failed? Or do you want some more help? I mean, that was an easy one. That was a shoo-in. And Bloomberg.
Yeah, they're New York, I mean, they could probably do the same thing. Well, California, we have our very systems in place already. But New York's going to be a bankrupt state. You with me or against me?
Yeah, if you're
hello,
not.
Hello, how hard is a decision? Is it? Yeah. Oh, he's on our side. Yeah, duh.
It's like ring, ring. Hello, hey, it's Rom here. I got an offer you can't refuse. That was easy.
Joining two former Republican Senate Majority Leaders, Bob Dole and Dr. Bill Frist, himself a cardiac surgeon, Dr. Louis Sullivan, Secretary of Health and Human Services under President George H.W. Bush, supports reform.
I like the nuance there. Look, even Bush's guys like it. Even Bush's guys.
As does Republican Tommy Thompson, a former Wisconsin governor and Secretary of Health and Human Services under President George W. Bush.
See, Bush's guys love it.
These distinguished leaders understand that health insurance reform isn't a Democratic issue or a Republican issue.
He said insurance again.
Because they've changed it, John. It's a bait and switch right there. Kabada boom. It's a shell game.
Health insurance. It's total bait and switch, and nobody's picked up. I haven't heard this speech, but nobody's picked up on this in the media. Are you telling me?
Yep. Because more important is to talk about the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, yeah.
The switch, baby. That's the switch. While we weren't looking, they switched it from health care reform to health insurance reform. That's the switch. Covered up by a moon bombing and a Nobel Peace Prize.
American issue that demands a solution. Still, there are some in Washington today who seem determined to play the same old partisan politics.
Yeah, you know, the racists.
Working to score political points. Even if it means burdening this country with an unsustainable status quo. A status quo of rising health care costs that are crushing our families, our businesses, and our government. A status quo of diminishing coverage that's denying millions of hardworking Americans the insurance they need.
Yeah.
A status quo that gives big insurance companies the power to make arbitrary decisions about your health care.
See, it's all about insurance
companies.
That's
a status quo I reject. And that's a status quo the American people reject. the distinguished former congressional leaders who urged us to act on health insurance.
It's almost over.
He said insurance reform.
Saying it again. He's saying it again.
Historic moment at hand, and reminded us that this moment will not soon come again. They called on members of both parties to seize this opportunity to finally confront a problem that has plagued us for far too long. That is what we are called to do at this moment. That is the spirit of national purpose.
This is bogus. I mean, all you have to do is have an insurance commissioner.
It's like
that's the problem.
Yep.
Now's the time to come together as Americans.
Ugh.
Now's the time to meet our responsibilities to ourselves and to our children and secure a better, healthier future for generations to come. That future is within our grasp.
Yes.
So let's go finish the job.
We need the yay at the end of that one. I'm going to send you that clip.
Yay! Well, so I do have some details on what the Senate Finance Committee has been working on. This is the Max Baucus.
I don't see why. Let's face it. What else we have? I mean, this is like. You've bummed me out with this.
Let me just tell you one thing that'll really bum you out. There will be penalties. I've bummed out the buzzkill. Dude, that's huge. There will be. If you have a gun, if you own a gun, then there will be penalties on you.
For what?
Okay.
Wait a minute.
Let me tell you before you lay into it. Dangerous activities. Coverage prescribed by the administration will, to control costs, exclude coverage for what it regards as excessively dangerous activities, such as hunting.
What?
Yes. If you keep a firearm in the household for hunting, self-defense, or killing people, that will be regarded as excessively dangerous activity, and coverage may be excluded. Or...
more people get injured playing basketball.
More people get injured in the bathroom. But if you have a gun in the home,
no service for you!
Interesting, isn't it?
Oh, that's a total scam. Where'd you get that one? That's a good one. I'll give you a 10. That's your. We need a little jingle for your occasional zinger.
When I really get one. Well, let's just put it this way. We don't pull any punches. In fact, we do quite the opposite.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Yeah. Whenever I do something good, I get to play that one.
It's the drums that make that work.
Yeah. It really is. It's crazy.
That is totally nuts. That's amazing. Now, so I suppose that while the right wingers on their talk shows are going berserk over
the Nobel Peace Prize.
Peace Prize, they kind of ignore this because beautiful.
Yeah. Anyway, right now it's time.
And now back to real news.
Something that I'm sure you're all over, John. I haven't checked your blog, Dvorak.org/blog, to see if you've posted this, but Miss Singapore, beauty queen Miss Singapore World, has given up her crown.
Already?
Yes, she's given up her crown after it has emerged. She had stolen credit cards to go on a shopping spree for lingerie.
Huh. Well, let me get this straight. Here's a drop-dead knockout chick from Singapore.
Yeah.
Who could probably have any guy she wanted.
Yeah.
And she's got stolen credit cards to buy lingerie when she could probably get all the lingerie she ever wanted in the world if she just put up a website.
Yeah. Organizers of the ERM World Marketing Pageant said she had resigned Tuesday of her own accord. She will no longer represent Singapore at the Miss World Finals to be held in South Africa in December. It's a travesty.
Wasn't this is this a new old story? Check the date on that story.
September 30th.
Huh.
She bought
the one they just did was in South Africa.
When did
I can't keep track of all these patches.
Didn't South Africa win?
Well, I thought somebody. Yeah, maybe. This whole thing. Maybe that's what it is.
It's
this whole thing sounds bogus. I call bogus.
Here's, I'll tell you what's really bogus. So, of course, a 14-year-old girl died after receiving the Cervix HPV cervical cancer vaccination. And, you know, within like 15 minutes, she went into coma and died.
Is this the same story that you just ran 2 weeks ago, the girl in England?
This is about the girl in England. And of course, you know, they had this, they stopped, vaccinations and like, oh no, this can't go on. This is dangerous. But you know, that can't happen because look at all the expensive marketing materials we've already bought. We have to continue with the program because we can't just stop it, UK. So the pathologist has confirmed today at the opening of the inquest into the death of Natalie Morton, she died from a large malignant tumor of unknown origin in the heart and lungs.
Oh.
Unknown origin.
She had a big tumor in her heart and lungs.
Yeah, and that's why she died after she received the vaccine.
So in other words, what you're saying or what they're saying is it's just a coincidence.
Oh, crap. I'm not fast enough on the
coincidence?
Draw.
Coincidence? I think not!
Yeah, exactly. And so now, of course, the program has been reinstituted, reinstated. Hey, keep on rocking, people.
So what other depressing news do you have for us on this lovely Saturday night?
I have some, well, we it's two down, one to go, or one down, one more to go, actually. Polish President Lech Kaczynski signed the and ratified the Lisbon Treaty. So all we need now is for the Czech guy to sign up, and Tony Blair can become president of Europe.
Of the world!
Yeah!
Well, the Czech guy's ready to fold because he just says there's only one thing he wants. And apparently, you know, it's been done before. I think England and a few other people, there's these little provisos they put into the Constitution that's specific to certain countries. And the one for the Czech Republic is that they can't be found liable based on EU law for all the Germans that they rousted after World War II from the country, which they're fearful that would become sort of a kind of a financial issue with them.
Oh, yeah. Well, this Ireland had a whole bunch of things in there, which I think included a lot of tax. Ireland, of course, is the country that so far has received the most money from the EU and is it's a tax haven. It's a beautiful place for manufacturing. Apple has a huge factory there. I think.
There was a couple of stories that revealed that as good as Ireland was for all this, many of these same companies picked up, you know, pulled up their tents and went to Poland because it was even cheaper there.
Well, it was cheaper, but. There, you know, there's a lot of Polish there. I can just hear comic strip blogger writing a hate email to me as we speak. I couldn't resist.
Those Polish people.
You shut up, Adam Curry. You are American. Shut up about you. You know nothing. Yeah. So, it'll be interesting. And, you know, we've kind of drifted away from the whole debate, but of course, 2 years ago, and remember, it was the Dutch and the French who originally said no, and then, that wasn't good enough, so we just, let's just go have them vote again, but not actually have the people in a referendum, but let's just have the their representatives vote. And then, of course, it was passed and ratified, same in France. And then the Irish said no, and then we said, let's just have a do-over, and then, you know, of course, a huge money came out, and everyone was probably... You know, they got no job. There's all kinds of crap going on, so no one's really paying attention. And maybe they used rigged voting machines. When you read the Lisbon Treaty, which is essentially the European Constitution pulled apart in all kinds of legalese, and I did take the time to read through this. It references footnotes. And these footnotes are critically important because they tell you what the actual laws will be, and just one of them is about the death penalty. So a big thing is no one in Europe wants a death penalty. So according to the Lisbon Treaty, there's no death penalty unless, point to footnote, which you have to go download from some other website, unless there is a situation of unrest.
And what does that mean? Is it defined?
No, of course not.
Is unrest defined?
No, of course not. That's the whole point. Of course it isn't. That will be defined by Tony Blair. Oh, we have unrest. And then all of a sudden, the death penalty is going to be okay. It's all kinds of little gotchas like this. If you have a, you can be incarcerated if you're an alcoholic, a drug addict, or if you have a communicable disease. You know, like, I don't know, swine flu. There's all these little things in there. I mean, that's going to be the true Gitmo state. Well, the minute that the Czech dude folds, it's all over. And of course he's going to fold. He has no choice in the matter.
Oh, yeah.
No choice. And they'd like to do it by, well, I guess, you know, the Tony Blair thing, it's supposed to happen pretty soon. If they can get the Czech Republic to ratify, then Tony Blair could be in very quickly. And it's going to come down, because the way the voting system works, basically Germany and France determine everything. You know, so it'll be, it'll be Angela Merkel who will have to push the button, and she's going to say yes. That's obvious. Tony Blair.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. You know, who? I mean, the modern Hitler is going to be a guy like Tony Blair. I mean, that's just obviously it.
God damn. Let me just mark that. That was beautiful, John. The modern Hitler is going to be someone like Tony Blair. Cut a bing. I love that. Great statement. John C. Dvorak, New York Times. Since we get so much flack for not covering Europe, there does seem to be a lot of Gitmo Nation East news coming our way. Nelly Kroes, our friend, the anti-competition or competition commissioner, I guess we should say, of the
anti-American. Let's put it.
Yeah, she's going after Google and IBM now.
Well, everybody's going after IBM, but the thing about the IBM, it started here, and so she can't let us actually do anything that would. But the IBM thing seems to be like another one of these "don't look here" deals. It's a total scam. What are they going after? They're going after IBM for abusing its market position to sell mainframes. Sell mainframes against who? Who else sells mainframes?
Yeah, nobody.
NEC? I mean, I don't even know who makes them anymore.
Yeah, you think you're right.
It's like ridiculous. And then, of course, Google, you know, is going to be the target, just a never-ending target because of the fact that nobody can make a search engine as good. And I don't know. The whole thing is crazy.
Well, she's going to start finding them big money. That's how you siphon off money. Get it into the EU. And what happens to that money? When you get $1 billion from Microsoft, where does it go?
It goes into the Mitterrand coffers for their pedophile thing.
John, my God, I'm so proud of you. You're doing so well.
As soon as I saw that story, I said, when's Adam going to bring this one up? Your basic theory that the entire Europe is a bunch of pedophiles.
Yeah, yeah. The top of the politicians, yeah, that is pretty much it. What was the Mitterrand story? Do you have it there by any chance? Hello? John?
Oh. Sorry, somebody rang the phone.
All right. Do you have the Mitterrand story? Do you have something printed out?
No, I don't have it. It was Mitterrand's, one of his cousins, or I forgot who it was. He's like one of the ministers in France. Mitterrand's a big family. It's like one of the most powerful families in Europe. And I guess he was busted for something with little. He went on a one of those sex tours to the Philippines.
Thailand. Was it Thailand
or something like that? Yeah. And he says, no, he didn't go on a sex tour. It was all young adults, you know, it was all legal. And so I don't know what the details are, but it seems pretty sketchy.
Yeah.
No, but it falls right in. As soon as I read it, I said, there you go. There's the upper crust of Europe, you know.
It's true, man. The Fortis Bank, the Lippens brothers, they're all fucking pedophiles. And there's so much evidence. There's so much evidence. They have video of these guys in parks with picking up boys, you know, and like their assigned drivers suicide themselves. You know, it's crazy, man. It's just crazy.
Yeah, this isn't covered much by the New York Times. In fact, I'm actually stunned that this thing was even mentioned anywhere. And of course, he's, you know, denying everything, of course. I was when I was in Cognac about 20 years ago, I was roaming around the cellars of Hennessy's, their Paradis cellars, all these 100-year-old barrels filled with cold cognac. And on every one of the barrels, there's the name of the grower that distilled it or had it. And there was Mitterrand. And I guess the Mitterrand family has a huge holding in the cognac area where they grow the Uni Blanc and distill it into a cognac used by the best cognac blenders.
Okay.
Sorry, just thought you mentioned it.
So bully on them.
So they can't be all bad.
All right. Just like Kim Jong-il has a nice Cabernet selection. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes, I know. And I would just love to sit down and sample some Latour and discuss it with him.
Let's see.
But somebody who could probably make that happen has done nothing in that regard.
Yeah, I'm seeing him in November. Don't worry. I'm working on it. I'm seeing Uncle Don in November.
Yeah, and I can see how this meeting's going to end. You're going to walk away. These guys are going to jump on a plane. Then you're going to slap yourself in the head and say, I forgot to mention this thing.
John, I'm not going to forget. I'm absolutely going to say, listen, Uncle Don, I know you're real busy with, like, you know, keeping the Koreans from bombing us and shit, but could you think you could hook up my friend for a little Cabernet tasting?
Yeah, right. Marginalize the idea. Trivialize it. Fun of me.
He might actually say, you know what? That's interesting. Bill's going over to get some more note-eating journalists. Who knows?
No, right, note-eating journalists.
Radar Man from the Netherlands wrote in and said, hey, you know, I've heard you guys mentioning about the Dutch wanting their bicycles back from the Germans who took them in World War II. I just want you to know, I know where they took them. He knows where the bikes are.
The bikes are still there.
Yeah, he says, look, back in the early 70s, while in the Air Force, I was a member of a radar installation team that went to Tempelhof Air Force Base in Berlin to set up a new ATC radar system. If you've been to Berlin, you know Tempelhof is huge, which is true. It's amazing. 1 mile long from end to end. Absolutely the most fascinating building I've ever been in. I think they just closed it, actually, which makes sense when I read this story. So to run new cables for the radar, we drilled through a wall with a big concrete drill. We punched through, but the guys on the other side said they couldn't see the drill bit coming out. After some investigation, we found out the prints were wrong. There was a huge room completely walled off that was filled with hundreds of bikes with those big baskets.
That's the Dutch bike.
Yeah, so he said, the guess is that in World War II, Tempelhof was under construction repairs while it was being bombed. The room got sealed up by mistake and lost. 10 years later, he says he went back to Tempelhof several times, discovered the bikes had been liberated and refurbished by the base for use by Air Force personnel. Everyone from base admin troops to base plumbers and electricians used them to get around. So if anyone wants to know where your bike is, it's in Berlin.
Huh. Now, well, at least they put it to good use.
Yeah, that's good information.
Yeah.
I mean,
one of the many untold stories we have here for you on No Agenda.
And you know what? We work hard at collecting them. We work hard at disseminating. This is actually something you could put on the History Channel. That story about those bikes, if we had some pictures or video, you could do a half-hour show on that. Easy.
Yo. Oh, and it would be just as fascinating as anything else on the History Channel.
In HD.
So I'm looking at the History Channel website because they have a phony baloney thing about Thanksgiving. Because one of our producers mentioned that we should at least say that this weekend is Thanksgiving weekend in Canada, and of course the coincidence is that their Thanksgiving falls exactly on the Monday that we have Columbus Day. So I guess so the banks don't have to, you know, so there's no problem with somebody sending bank transfer.
I think not.
You know, many people think that this is going to be the big bank weekend where shit goes wrong, you know, this Columbus Day weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because that's what everyone's
just made
waiting
a deposit.
For.
Dough.
Crap. Just made a deposit. No, this is the theory, because that's kind of how it went in the Great Depression, is they had a bank holiday weekend and boom, you know, of course they didn't have ATMs then, but you know, then all the banks just never reopened on that Tuesday.
Oh, pshaw.
Well, I'm just saying.
There's no evidence that anything's going on.
Oh, yeah. No,
then you'll be right and we can talk about it on Thursday.
Oh, there's nothing going on. Yeah, that's right. There's nothing going on whatsoever. Nothing to see here.
The market's going up. Yeah, so here's an interesting story that came up. Missing sidekick data. Somebody put this on Twitter, so I thought I'd mention it. And I'm probably not going to be doing Twit this weekend because Leo's in Dubai buying gold.
Well, no. We know what he's really doing in Dubai. We know all about Dubai, don't we, John? We know what's happening in the underground of Dubai.
Okay. So somebody sent this in saying the cloud computing, this shows you the dangers of cloud computing. It looks like the T-Mobile system running, if you have one of those Sidekick danger things that keeps all the data on some server someplace, and they said the servers went down, lost all your names and addresses, all your data, which is, you know, this kind of thing does happen, but they've said that they may never get their data back.
I love that.
This is a Microsoft subsidiary, Danger, by the way. It's a server error. Let me just read this. It says that because of a server error at Danger, a Microsoft subsidiary, they bought them. Affected users might not get their data back at all. Do these people know what backing up is?
Yeah. No, I think the thumb drive was full.
Right. They ran out of thumb drives. It's unbelievable.
So that means that, so I guess they have a cloud service that tracks all of your contacts. It's not stored locally on your phone, on your device.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, I don't use the system, but apparently.
Where's the tech press on that?
It's all over the place. The tech press is jumping all over it. So it's not like.
All right, good.
It's being covered, believe me.
You want to hear Chris Rock about Roman Polanski?
Yeah, go for it.
Because this was on the Jay Leno show, which I think has lost 70% of his initial audience.
Oh, yeah,
that's sure. That's a failure, right? I mean, can we just consider this to be dead?
Yeah, you know, the night, this is kind of funny, the night that Leno came out, after, you know, first he made the admission about his affair and the blackmail. It was either that night or the following Monday. His ratings on the late night show, which starts at 11:30, were higher
than Leno,
than any show on NBC the entire day.
Dude, they are in so much trouble. I mean, what's going to happen? They can't afford. Where are the affiliates in all this? Aren't the affiliates supposed to be coming up in arms?
They're so steamed up. They're already starting to decide to bump Leno and run old reruns.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. Well, Leno's going to retire a rich man.
Now, he'll retire a rich man, and NBC's going to show what a bunch of dummies they are. Like somebody was right, I think it was in Variety or one of the magazines, somebody said the problem that they have right now is that they never even considered the fact that this stupid experiment was going to fail, and so there's no plan B.
Let's listen to Chris Rock about Roman Polanski. Pretty funny. And, of course, it all fits right in perfectly with your theory that he has a new movie coming out, they're looking for distribution, and this is great promotion. Although Chris Rock clearly has something to say about that. Hold on a second. This is coming from Hulu. Hulu. Of course, so it won't play immediately. Ooh, Hulu. Hulu inside.
I'm playing from Hulu?
Yeah. Of course. We're live, baby. We don't mess around.
I don't know, man. This Polanski thing got me, man.
Yeah.
What the hell? People are defending Roman Polanski, because he made some good movies?
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean,
are you kidding me?
Here's my thing.
He made good movies 30 years ago, Jay. Come on, even Johnny Cochran don't have the nerve to go, well, did you see OJ play against New England?
That's funny.
Come on, man. She's 13. 13.
I know.
I seen some hot 16-year-olds that look 18.
Right.
17 that look 18. Right. 13 is 13. Nobody gets away with having sex with a 13-year-old. Only person that could have sex with a 13-year-old is that pilot, Scully. He can do it. That's Scully, you know, because he landed the plane in the water, but only once.
Right.
Like, Scully, don't let that happen again. 13?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Rape. It's rape.
Exactly.
Rape's number two. Okay, it's murder.
Right.
Then rape.
Right, exactly.
It's number two. Like the United States, we want to capture Osama bin Laden and murder him. We're not going to rape him. That would be barbaric.
All right. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, he's actually quite funny.
Yeah, if you're in the U.S., you can watch that from the link in the show notes at noagendashow.com.
And if you're out of the U.S., find a proxy.
Yeah, proxy server. Exactly. That's the way to go. The one other thing I just wanted to give you props, because now I'm seeing it everywhere. And I know it was mentioned a long time ago, will this be our Vietnam? But you are so right, John. This the war in Afghanistan, which, again, this may also be part of what the moon bombing and the Peace Prize is all about, to cover up new troops. And I still don't quite understand how 21,000 extra troops were deployed without Congress actually approving it, you know, although we did just, you know, pass a bill for another almost $700 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But now I'm seeing cartoons, I'm seeing stories pop up about this being the Vietnam of our era. And
yeah, well, it's so obvious.
What was the conversation? You know what?
There's one of our fractals.
Oh, boy. Yes, indeed.
Fractal.
But the part of the fractal that's missing is the anti-war movement. You know, even Code Pink are now endorsing Barack Obama's Afghanistan policy.
The anti-war movement during the Vietnam War was the same way at the beginning. There was no anti-war movement until late in the game.
Oh, really? But then, was it primarily students, or who was the main leader?
There were students that were going to get drafted, and they didn't like the idea, and so for example, you know, in the big colleges and universities, they had these teach-ins, which were these, you know, these radicals telling people why this Vietnam War is a piece of crap, and in fact, they when it was. And they got all these students all worked up, and so they got their willpower to a point where they would start protesting, and then all hell broke loose.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because of course we do not have a draft, and in fact, what the game has been changed, where somehow we've made it possible for all of these mercenaries to go in, like Blackwater or Z, as it's known now. So that's the big change, is we just rent an army. We don't actually send our kids over anymore.
Well, that's... I mean, originally, in Vietnam was mostly these professional... They weren't the rent-a-army, because we actually... It wasn't really a great idea. But it was mostly, you know, the special forces, rangers, and all these, you know, hot shots before they just started throwing bodies at it. And I think... I think what's going to happen is, I think at some point, because the anti-war people that are in Congress, they know that the one thing they can do to get draw attention to the fact that this war, we should stop this crap, is they'll be the ones that try to institute a draft. And I think a draft is going to be instituted, because at some point we just can't afford these wars. It's too expensive.
Yeah. Well, no, because we've let the printing of money keep on going.
At some point, we're going to have to either do a draft or stop this crap.
Interesting, though, that you say that some of these law, the anti-war movement, will actually start to institute the draft. That you're right. That is you get someone's attention pretty quick. Hey, boy, grab a hold of this M16, boy. I'm going over to Iraq and Afghanistan, and in fact, not just hey, boy, hey, girl, you're going too. Hate it. Hate it so much. So stupid. What the fuck are we doing there?
We are, you already know. You're the one that has the theory.
Well,
we're there to protect the poppy crop.
Not just protect it. We reinstated it, grew it all again after the Taliban decimated it, and now we're shipping it back.
Yeah, you want to keep the population docile, and you got to drug them.
John, I'm so proud of you yet again.
I like the theory. It sounds good.
It's what's happening, man. For those of you who still wonder, Mena,
that's
Arkansas.
That's why drugs should be legalized.
Yes, Mena, Arkansas. Oh, I have a good one on that. If you're in California, the word is now officially out. Here it is. Los Angeles County District Attorney prepares to crack down on pot outlets.
Where?
In California. Los Angeles?
That's not going to fly.
Well, let me...
pot is essentially is a de facto legal in California already. And anyone who thinks they're going to get anywhere cracking down, they're going to find themselves run out of town.
Well, the story is slow to load. Kind of like the potheads who are trying to read it. Here we go.
Hey, man, what is that story,
man? I can't find this. Oh, Los Angeles.
I have to turn the page.
Los Angeles County District Attorney Steve Cooley said Thursday he will prosecute medical marijuana dispensaries for over-the-counter sales, targeting a practice that has become commonplace under an initiative approved by California voters more than a decade ago. He says...
Now, who is this guy? Well, hold on a second. Let me get the browser up. What's this guy's name?
Steve Cooley, the Los Angeles County District Attorney. He says, the vast, vast, vast majority, about 100% of dispensaries in Los Angeles County and the city are operating illegally. They are dealing marijuana illegally, according to our theory.
Our what?
Our theory.
He has a theory?
That's his theory. The time is right to deal with this problem. Interesting.
He's a former LAPD.
Yeah.
So he's got his, you know, he's got his mind, he's got a mindset that's dubious. He's, it's his third term. The guy's 61 or two, he's 62. He looks like a dick. Oh, and his office was unsuccessful in the prosecution of Robert Blake for the murder of his wife. But they go after dope.
Go after the potheads. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he's a little more lucky there.
I think it's a natural response to the rather flagrant marketing practices of a bunch of the dispensaries. The medical veneer has been wearing thinner and thinner, which of course is true.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's bogus, but there's no reason for this guy to pick it up. According to the Los Angeles Times, I'm reading this from Wikipedia. Advocates for battered women have criticized Cooley's handling of Deborah Pegler's case and others like it. In 8 out of 8 cases, he's opposed the use of a California law that allows battered women in prison to be given a new hearing if evidence of domestic violence was omitted during the original proceedings. Heaven forbid that these battered women get a second hearing.
Yeah.
The guy's a dick.
I have to.
He lives in Toluca Lake.
Oh, Toluca Lake.
Why does he go down and live in Compton?
Toluca Lake. Oh, oi, oi, oi.
Meanwhile, they have a picture of him here in the Wikipedia, standing in front of the Republican Club banner. Another sleazeball. Anyway, good luck down there in L.A. We have a dipshit DA up here, too, so I guess the state's filled with them.
So there's a lot of talk about another stimulus package. Have you been hearing the whispering?
Yeah.
And it looks like there is one.
What happened to the first one?
I don't know. You mean the $787 billion? Well, it didn't work. Yeah, all we have is more people out of jobs, and here's some stuff that's going on already that's probably, well, first of all, there is a lot being done. I think this is part of the original stimulus. So now the House has voted yet another 13 additional weeks of unemployment benefits for laid off workers. And that's only if you're in a state where the jobless rate is 8.5% or above, which I think is about all of them. Thursday, Senate Democrats reached a deal to extend the benefits an additional 14 weeks. Both proposals are paid for by extending a federal unemployment tax. Nice. On the table, extending subsidies for laid-off workers to help them with their COBRA. That'll be $25 billion. So then they're getting ready to pass all this, but they don't know how to pay for it. That's essentially, this is a AP article. Several bills would issue extra large payments, more than 50 million Social Security recipients, to make up for the lack of cost of living increase next year. Another bill on the table would set one-time payments at $250, matching the amount paid to Social Security recipients and railroad retirees as part of the stimulus package, the previous one. What else do we have? Nancy Pelosi is considering a proposal to allow money-losing companies to use their losses to get refunds of taxes paid in the previous 5 years. That'll be good. Here's one I kind of like. Proposed by Arlen Specter. If you... wait a minute, is this Arlen Specter? I think it was. if you create a new job within your company, you'll get a $4,000 check, which is probably going to be a tax credit, I think.
Yeah, it's usually a tax credit.
Yeah, but which no, but it's still cool. So,
so let's hire some people.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. Wait a minute. It doesn't say how much you have to actually pay them, does it?
I don't know. You have to look it up. If you don't have to pay them much, I mean, this could be a bonanza.
This is a good idea.
And does it say how long you have to keep them? Can you hire them for a week?
I don't know. This is interesting. Oh, wait, it's paid out over 2 years. It's a tax credit paid out over 2 years for each new employee.
Does the employee have to stay there for 2 years? What if they quit?
I don't know, John. What if you have one employee and he keeps quitting and you rehire him every time?
You can make a lot of money off of that guy.
Okay. Let's keep our eye on this one, shall we? That could be interesting. Anyway, what this is all amounting up to is clearly that a new stimulus is being prepared. And I think it will happen. I really think it will happen because we're bust.
We are bust. It's ridiculous. And I guess that's as good a time as any to complain about our financial future for our show.
Yeah. How are we doing financially?
I think we're doing okay, even though we didn't get a lot in because of Thursday, but we've only been off the air for a couple of hours. But I want to mention the people that did give us some contributions this last couple of days. And I also want to mention Matthew Stewart in Guelph, Ontario, who gave us $50 and claims that we've never mentioned him, even though I think we did.
Okay. Well, Matthew, but, thank you very much. Appreciate
yeah.
it. This would be the second time he's donated?
We're looking for as much money from Canadians as possible.
Yes.
Because their dollar's worth more than ours now, I think.
And they got it easy up there.
Anyway, we have Mickey Kennedy at Kingsville, Maryland, who's our executive producer today. He gave us $399 and he wants us to plug ereleases.com.
Celebrating 11 years of press release distribution this month. $399 will get your news on the wire and to journalists before they hit the unemployment line.
So, you know, there's a bunch of these services that do this. I mean, there's PR Newswire, there's e-releases, there's MarketWire, I think, BusinessWire. There's a bunch of these, and e-releases is one of them. And they're actually pretty good services. And at this point in time, they're as good as the newspapers.
Yeah, no kidding.
A press release is, you know, half these newspapers are just running press releases anyway, so let's just give up.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's ereleases.com. You can check it out. I want to thank Mickey for being the executive producer of this show. Robert Seals gave us $50, and he is from the interesting town of Cripple Creek, Colorado.
Yay, Cripple Creek.
That is so, you know, wow. Sterling Ellsworth gave us $77.77 last week, and he sent, and I couldn't remember where he's from. And he sent me a note saying, I'm from Santa Barbara, you idiot. Here's another $77.77.
Thank you. Wait a minute. Where is he from again? I can't remember, John.
Santa Barbara.
Oh, no. Don't tell me. He
you
keeps
know,
sending
that's
money.
Where Oprah's from.
Really? She's not a Chicago native?
Well, she's got a big place in Santa Barbara. She put Santa Barbara on the map.
Right on.
Ian Davies in Porthcawl, Porthcawl, Bridgend, UK, gave us $55. Can you hear the sirens out there?
Yeah, I was wondering if that was you or me.
No, it's sirens. They're coming to get me. Let me
hurry up then. Hurry up. Get all the people in there before you mess it up. Yeah.
Jay Kramer, Egan, Minnesota, 52. I think I mentioned him before, but that's all we got. So we need people to pick up the slack a little bit. I'd like to get some more people from the Netherlands and Holland for sure, because Adam is providing much of their entertainment over there.
Yes. And, do you know how much money has been made on my personal, my personal life in the past 4 or 5 months? Millions, I tell you.
Yeah.
Millions.
Yeah.
I'm providing
Everybody's
great entertainment.
Making money for you.
Yeah.
And by the way, we do have some jingles to do for some people. We've been putting it off, and we'll get to them.
I was not aware.
But for the people that wanted those jingles, send me another email, please, saying with the no agenda on the subject line and the word jingle, so I can look them up. Also, the live. We're still working on the live stream, and we're and if you want to help us on that, put no agenda and live stream in the subject line so I can look it up, because I, you know, I get too much. I get a lot of email and all. You know, you need to find some way of looking stuff up. And we also would like to encourage more nights. We don't have, you know, we only have four. We need some more nights. We have a bunch of people in line for being a night, but that's going to take another few months. And so I want everyone to go to No Agenda Show, noagendashow.com or dvorak.org/NA and donate. And if you, if nothing else, can you subscribe for $5 a month? Because this is essentially parking meter money. It's not going to really break the bank by any means.
And we actually work pretty hard on this show. And, you know, the amount of money we're making for it is nowhere, it's not even near, you know, like small market radio salary. We'd love to do more. And I have said repeatedly, I would love to spend all day doing this. And if we get enough money and donations, I will quit my day job. I'd be happy to.
And I think everyone else would be happy too. So, I want to mention one more person who gave us $50, which is Jordan Wyatt out of New Zealand, and he runs a podcast called the NZ, which is what you say for Z in New Zealand, NZ Vegan, and he tells me that he had an interesting thing to say. He said, for one thing, I don't know why a vegan listens to the show. Or is it vegan? I can never remember. But anyway, I don't understand.
He likes to stay informed, John. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, but he did come up with a gem. But he says that if the government makes an edict that you have to take the swine flu shot because there's animal products.
Oh, yeah, you can't have it. Yeah, you're a vegan, right.
You say you're a vegan, I can't take the shot, it's against my religion, blah, 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 and then you won't get the shot. That's actually genius.
That's a very good one. Maybe he's a carnivore curious. maybe that's why he listens to the show.
Curious, that's a good one.
Hey, by the way, in the chat room, Jay Won't Dart said his donation didn't get read.
Who?
Jay. Is there a Jay who donated?
Not in this last week. Not in the last couple of days. Not it didn't come up.
He's
on
from
the list.
He's from New Zealand.
The New Zealand guy I just mentioned, that's Jordan Wyatt.
Oh, okay.
There's a Jay Kramer.
No, you're right. You're right. No, you're right. You're right. He just responded. Yeah, he got mentioned. Okay, I'm sorry. Finally, John, I'd just like to give some props to. I'm not a big fan of the Electronic Frontier Foundation because when I had my first dispute with MTV, they basically said no servers for you. We don't give a shit. And I think they should have helped me at the time. But they have been fighting pretty hard about the FISA wiretaps, and they finally got a real answer about the relationship between telcos, in particular AT&T, who of course were spying on American citizens, which is the one thing that you pretty much could live in America and know that wouldn't happen, and that all changed under George W. Bush. It's been extended by our current president, who said he wouldn't. Here's the little ditty that came out of the district court. The feds argued documents showing consultation over the controversial telecom immunity proposal were not subject to the Freedom of Information Act since they are protected as, quote, intra-agency records. And here's the paragraph that's cool. Communications between the agencies and the telecommunications companies regarding the immunity provisions of the proposed legislation have been regarded as intra-agency because the government and the companies have a common interest in the defense of the pending litigation and communications regarding the immunity provisions concern that common interest. In other words, AT&T is considered to be an agency.
Well, haven't you seen their building over there in San Francisco? Well,
yeah. Yes, of course I have. But it's just nice to actually have it in black and white. They are part of the they're a federal agency. They are the CIA. Wow. Pinky swear. They are the CIA right there. It says it in black and white.
Yeah, that's why they had the thing about the AT&T, first they busted them up, and then all these little bells popped up, and then one bell started buying all the others and bought all the others, and Pacific Bell got bought by SBC, and the next thing you know, they all bought everybody else, and then they changed the name back to AT&T because they had too much, because the CIA had printed up so much letterhead.
They had all the business cards in place. Everyone had those cool passes and shields. All right. Anyway, you still have plenty of time to get rid of your guns if you want to be considered for health care. Under the newly minted, changed health care insurance reform bills that will be passed right under your very noses this Tuesday while you're talking about moon blasts and peace prizes.
And don't forget to go to noagendashow.com and donate just because, for no other reason, the fact that Adam dug up that gun thing, which is just the sneakiest way for gun-controlled guys to get their foot in the door that I've ever heard of. This is just chicken.
And thanks for tuning in early, those of you who are on the stream. We also always try to come to you early if there's some travel restrictions. Again, happy to quit the day job, but right now I can't. So instead of doing something later and boging you out, we make sure that everyone has a show to listen to when they expected it, even if it wasn't completely live. And we'll be talking to you again on Thursday, coming to you from Gitmo Nation West in San Francisco, California. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Silicon Valley North, I'm John C. Dvorak.
Thursday will be the day. We'll talk to you again right here on No Agenda.